Okay, we've finally gotten into the forts. There are sets of four things which are perfectly proclaimed by the Lord Buddha. The four foundations of mindfulness. Here a monk abides contemplating body as body, ardent, clearly aware, and mindful, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world. He abides contemplating feelings as feelings. He abides contemplating mind as mind. He abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects. Okay, these four foundations of mindfulness are really important. This is the foundation of enlightenment. This is how you become enlightened. This is how you become completely awake, by being aware of these four things. Now, being aware of the body in the body, what he's talking about is being aware of all sensations that arise while you're breathing. When you're doing the breath meditation, you're breathing in, you breathe out. You know when your breath is long, when it's short. You know when your breath is coarse or when it's fine. You notice all the different kinds of changes in the breath. And it also means that you're aware of any tensions or tightness that arise in the body. Now, you can be sitting in meditation and all of a sudden you notice that your shoulder is up and there's tension there. So you relax, let it go. But the place where you notice the body in the body the most is the tightness in your head, in your mind. And you relax. You let go of that. And this is probably the most important aspect of the meditation. Now, when you let go of the tightness that's in your head, in your mind, you're doing a variety of things. First, when you let go of that tightness in your head and your mind, you feel your mind expand and become calm. You're letting go of attachment, and you're letting go of that very subtle ego belief of I am that. You've let go of all thoughts, that's clinging. You let go of the attachment to I. And when you do that, your mind becomes calm and clear. And then you bring that mind back to your object of meditation. Now, when you have a hindrance arise, a hindrance, let's say there's five hindrances. There you have lust or greed, hatred or aversion, sleepiness or dullness, restlessness, anxiety, doubt, perplexity. Let's say you have restlessness arise. Now, restlessness is a feeling that makes you want to jump out of your skin. You feel like you just can't stand it. You have to move around, right? Now, when you're meditating, what you do is you notice that that feeling is there and you notice all of the thoughts. And the first thing you do is let go of the thoughts and let go of that tightness. Relax. Then you see that tight mental fist around the feeling. That tight mental fist is aversion. I don't like it. And you open up and allow that feeling to be there. You don't try to make the feeling go away. You just allow the feeling to be there without any resistance at all anymore. And then you relax that tightness in your head, in your mind. And come back to your object of meditation, if it's the breath or loving kindness, whatever it happens to be. Now, the way you overcome the restlessness is not by continually letting it go and relaxing and coming back. That's part of it. The way you let go of the restlessness is by seeing how it arises first. What happens first? What happens right after that? What happens after that? What happens after that? And I won't tell you everything. Those are things that you have to tell me when you do retreat, when you practice the meditation. But it always arises as a feeling. Tightness happens in your mind. And then there's some little subtle thoughts that come up, and then the feeling gets bigger, and the thoughts get bigger, until finally you're pulled away completely from your meditation, and you're caught by the restlessness. And you might stay away for, 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes sometimes. You get so much caught and involved in thinking. Now, every form of thinking about a feeling is an attachment. And that is restlessness. So when you let go of the restlessness and you relax and you come back to your object of meditation, it's not the same restlessness as the one you let go. It comes up again. But it always comes up in the same order, in the same way. So if you're doing a meditation retreat and you tell me that you're real restless, I don't care what the reason is that you're restless. Why doesn't matter to me at all. What I want to know is, how did it happen? What happened first? What happened after that? Have you seen that? Now, the importance of seeing how it arises is that it sharpens your mindfulness. You become more attentive not on the content of the thoughts, but you become more attentive of the process of getting pulled away from your object of meditation. This is part of the foundations of mindfulness. It's a foundation of mindfulness of the body, and it's foundation of mindfulness of, what did it say here, mind. Actually, it's not a good translation. A better translation is citta. Is consciousness. What does your consciousness do when this starts to arise? How does it intermingle with the feeling, with the tightness? How are you able to watch the process? Now, this is also has to do with the feelings. It has to do also with the mind objects. The mind objects are the thoughts. That's basically what the mind objects are. When you look up in the Satipatthana Sutta, it describes, well, we can do it right now. It describes the foundation of contemplation of mental objects. It describes it as the five hindrances. It describes it as the five aggregates. It describes it as the six internal and external sense bases. It describes it as the seven factors of enlightenment. When you're sitting in meditation and your mind gets pulled away by this restlessness, and the feeling like you just can't sit still, and there's so much dissatisfaction that arises with what's happening, our first impulse is try to think the feeling away. Okay, now we have five aggregates. That's what this is made of. That's what this mind and body is. You have physical body. You have feeling. You have perception. You have, in Pali they say sankhara. It's been translated as volition. It's been translated as thoughts. I like thoughts best. And you have consciousness. Now these five things make up this process. Now, feelings are one thing, and thoughts are something else. But we try to control our feelings with our thoughts. This is how emotions arise. Because a feeling comes up, and then depending on what's happening to you at the moment, your mind will tend towards an emotional state about one thing or another. And the attachment to that and the tightness that happens in your body and in your mind is very, very painful. So when somebody comes up and they tell me they have restlessness, I ask them, how did it happen? How did it arise? And what am I asking when I'm talking about that? I'm asking them to look with mindfulness at all four foundations of mindfulness. I'm asking you to look at body. I'm asking you to look at feeling. I'm asking you to look at consciousness. I'm asking you to look at the mental objects. Sneaky, aren't I? So, you go back and you say, boy, this restlessness is really driving me crazy, but I know I'm being attached. So I'm not going to pay so much attention to the thoughts anymore. You let all of the thoughts go and you relax, and then you come back to the object of meditation. And then it starts to happen all over again. So what happens first? First, there's a feeling, there's a tightness in your mind and a slight tightness in your body. Now, when you see that, you're seeing the first foundation of mindfulness. And that feeling translates, that tightness translates into a feeling, and it's an unpleasant feeling. Now, feeling, you have three kinds. You have pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, and neutral feeling. It's got to be one of those three. And you can divide it up even more. But it's got to be one of those kinds of feeling. When restlessness arises, it is an unpleasant feeling. And you watch how mind attaches, how your consciousness attaches to that feeling. And that feeling becomes even more unpleasant. And then you see all of the thoughts of whatever your emotional state happens to be at the time just kind of running and running and running and running. Now, sometimes the thoughts can be highly emotional and unpleasant. And sometimes the thoughts can be enjoyable. Enjoyable kinds of restlessness is planning. We all love to plan. When I get done with this, then I'm going to go see this person, and he's going to say this, and I'm going to say this back, and then we're going to do that together. And it's your mind just taking off and pulling you further and further away from the meditation. And because you like that kind of thing, you become attached to it. But when you let go of the thinking about and relax, you let go of the thoughts. And the way you let go of the thoughts is simply by not entertaining those thoughts anymore. You just say, okay, let go, that's it. Don't think them anymore. And then you relax the tightness in your head, in your body. Mindfulness of the body again. And then you notice that tight mental hold around it. That's a feeling. And that's your consciousness making that stay there, the attachment. And you allow the feeling to be there. Whether it's pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling right then doesn't matter. Then you relax again. Then you redirect your attention back to your object of meditation. Now, it starts all over again. How did it start? What happened first? What happened after that? What happened after that? As you become more aware, as you take a deeper interest, not in the thoughts of restlessness and all of that emotional stuff, but how this process worked, you'll start to see more and more clearly, and you'll be able to let go of that more quickly. So when the tightness first starts to come up in your mind, because you've been looking at it so closely, you'll recognize that this is a hindrance. All of the hindrances arise in the same way. They all start with that tightness. They all start with the movement of mind and the thoughts and the tightness getting bigger and the thoughts getting bigger until you're pulled away. But when you see that tightness start to arise, that means that your mindfulness, your awareness of how this process works is very sharp. And as soon as you see your mind starting to do that, you say, oh, let that go. And you'll stay with your object of meditation. You won't get caught by the hindrance at all. Clear, you're able to see the tightness when it first starts to arise, the easier it is to let go and stay on your object of meditation. As you stay on your object of meditation for longer periods of time, this is what most people call concentration. And in reality, it is a form of concentration, but it's not one-pointed concentration, because that tightness can come up at any time. When your mindfulness isn't sharp enough, when your mind starts to dull out a little bit, then that whole process will happen again, and now you have to work with the hindrance again, and now you have to see it more and more clearly. But as you stay on your object of meditation and you let go of the hindrances, you start to experience relief, joy, happiness, tranquility of mind. Your mindfulness is very sharp. But when it starts to dull out again, then that tightness starts again. And if your mindfulness is you weren't aware enough, you didn't see that tightness, you didn't see the movements of mind, you didn't see the thoughts, and you didn't see them getting bigger until they pulled you away. So now you have to go backwards and start letting all of this stuff go, coming back to your object of meditation and watching that process again. But the nature of our mind is it likes to be attached to all different kinds of thoughts and emotions. So if one kind of emotion didn't work, it'll pull up another one and distract you with that one for a while, and you can get caught. But when you become more and more familiar with this process, the easier it is to let go of all of the attachments So your mind stays more in the present moment all of the time. Now, the beauty of the four foundations of mindfulness is that it doesn't only have to do with sitting in meditation. The hindrances come up the same whether you're out there doing something or you're sitting here in meditation. When your mindfulness gets good, you'll be able to recognize this in your daily life. So, a sight, or a sound, or a taste, or a touch, a smell, or a thought can arise. And if it arises, and then that tightness starts, and then the thoughts and the tightness bigger, and the thoughts bigger, and then you're attached to one of the sense doors. Now you treat it in the same way. You keep on letting go. You let go of the sight. There's nothing worth seeing and being attached to. Now, that doesn't mean if you see a beautiful sunset, you can't appreciate it. You can. But you let go of all the tightness in your mind. And you see it completely because you don't have thoughts interfering with what you see. Now, the seven factors of enlightenment are very important. And I've had Vipassana teachers tell me that the only time you really are able to experience the seven factors of enlightenment is when you become enlightened. But that doesn't agree with what I just read in the Satipatthana Sutta. The first factor of enlightenment is mindfulness. Now this is a word that might be overused a little bit for Buddhists. Everybody has a different idea of what it means to be mindful. But the definition of mindfulness is interested observation. Okay, when you're interested in how processes work, that means you're going to watch them a little bit more closely. And that's what mindfulness is. Now, the second factor of enlightenment is investigation of how the experience arises. Investigation. You have to look at it, and you don't mentally analyze it by thinking about it, but as you see it, you begin to recognize. Now, the third factor of enlightenment is energy. As you watch more closely how the process works, it takes more and more energy to see more and more closely. And this is a natural thing. The more interest you have in how the process works, the more energy you have to want to see more of it. The next factor of enlightenment is very important. Now, it's put in the middle. There's seven factors. There's three on one side, three on the other side, and there's this one factor in the middle. Joy. The enlightenment factor of joy is when you finally see how the process starts to work, there's a relief that happens. And you start feeling happy because you're actually starting to see how all of this works. And that joy helps your mind to be very light and alert It's not a big kind of joy, like, oh, wow. But it's just, oh, this is how it works. And your mind just becomes lighter. And it becomes happy because you're actually starting to figure out how consciousness and how this mind and body process really does work. Now, when the joy, it'll be there for a period of time. And it'll fade away a little bit. You'll still have some joy. But when that fades away a little bit, you feel very, very tranquil. And tranquility is the next factor of enlightenment. As your mind becomes more and more tranquil, your mind also becomes more and more still, more composed. And people can call this one-pointed concentration, but it's not the same. Because there's more awareness. You're not so deep into the one-pointed concentration that you can't see this. You can see it very clearly. We can call this a mind that is very composed. It's still. It's calm. It stays with your object of meditation. You have that. It's tranquil. And it's still. Now the last factor of enlightenment is equanimity. And that means perfect mental balance. That's what equanimity actually means. It means a mind that's not wobbling like this. It's a mind that's still and it's balanced, and whatever arises, your mindfulness sees it. You start letting go of the tightness and tension. If you don't see it right at first, you have to investigate a little bit more clearly. When you do that, your energy picks up. When your energy picks up, there's the relief of letting go, and the joy arises. As the joy fades just a little bit, tranquility. As the tranquility gets stronger, mind becomes more and more composed. With that composed mind is perfect balance. Now, I just explained to you all of the four foundations of mindfulness. When you follow this, you will know a deeper happiness than you've ever known before. And when we're talking about the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth is there is suffering. It's suffering when a hindrance arises and you don't see it and you get caught by it. What's the cause of the suffering? Tightness and tension and the want to control. The cause of suffering is craving. The third noble truth is when your mindfulness is strong enough, and that is the cessation of suffering. There is no suffering when you see exactly how your mind works and you keep on opening and relaxing. Whenever there's the slightest little bit of tension and wobble, your mind, you see that and you relax. And that's the cessation of suffering. And the fourth noble truth, what I've been talking about this whole time, is the Eightfold Path. And we'll get into that more later. So the four foundations of mindfulness is the true base to be able to see, so that mind can become completely awake. Now we have the next one is talking about the four great efforts. Now the four great efforts, this is part of the Eightfold Path. And it says, here a monk arouses his will. Boy, I'm not sure I like that. Makes an effort. stirs up energy, exerts his mind, and strives to prevent the arising of unarisen, evil, unwholesome mental states. What does that mean? The unwholesome mental state is when that tightness really happens and your mind gets pulled away. And you get caught by one of the hindrances. Now your mind has unwholesomeness in it. Why is it unwholesome? Because you're identifying very strongly with those thoughts and with those feelings. You're taking them personally. But when you see clearly how the process works, when you let go completely, I'm getting ahead of myself here. I should stay closer to this. When you let go completely, you've let go of all the unwholesome states because you're seeing everything as process, not as I am this. It is my feeling. Every hindrance has I attached to it. Now, the I can be greed or lust. I want. Or it can be aversion or hatred. I don't want. Or it can be that dullness of mind, sleepiness. I'm sleepy. I'm dull. Or it can be restlessness or anxiety. I'm restless. Or it can be, I don't know, doubt. Now, when the hindrance takes you, the reason that this is called a hindrance is because it stops you from meditating. You're not meditating when you're caught by a hindrance. You're meditating when you recognize that you're caught and you let it go and relax and then come back to your object of meditation. When you're staying on your object of meditation, you are meditating. But the hindrance, you get so involved in thinking about something or planning or in an emotional state that you forget. You forget everything else and you just get into this emotional state, and the emotional state can be an unpleasant feeling or an unpleasant memory. It can be any kind of emotion that just grabs your mind and you become attached to it. And then, you remember I told you the five aggregates. We have feeling and we have thoughts. That's when we get into our old habit of trying to think the feeling and control the feeling with the thought. But again, feelings are one thing, thoughts are something else. As we let go of the thoughts and relax, we're starting to let go of the attachment. Starting to. As you let go of that tight mental hold and allow the feeling to be there by itself, even though it hurts and it's unpleasant, it's all right for it to be there. Because the truth is, when it arises, it's there. That's the truth. Anytime you try to fight with the truth, anytime you try to control the truth, it causes more and more suffering to arise. So, when you allow the truth to be there, without trying to make it one way or another, just open up and relax into it. And let go of the tightness. Then you can come back to your object of meditation again. But the nature of these hindrances is the attachment is strong. And your mind's going to keep bouncing back and forth with it a little while. But as you take an interest in how it happened, then you start letting go little by little of the attachment to it. Because you're not taking it personally anymore, it's just part of this process. And it's an impersonal process. Nobody is going to say, well, I haven't been angry for a while, so I think I want to be angry, or restless, or have a dull mind. They happen because the conditions are right for them to arise. Why do you get a dull mind? Because you get a little bit lazy, and you just kind of ho-hum, and the energy goes down, and then you're caught. But when you have very sharp interest, when you're investigating how it works, your energy will pick up, and that dull mind just goes away by itself. So anytime you get caught by a hindrance, that's called an unwholesome state because there is that personal attachment to it. I am that. Okay, he strives to overcome evil, unwholesome mental states that have arisen. How do you strive to do that? By noticing it, letting it go, coming back to your object of meditation, and then start looking at the process of how it gets taken away again. And he strives to produce unarisen, wholesome mental states. Now, what's an unarisen, wholesome mental state? It's that mind that has no tightness and no tension in it, that mind that you're bringing back to your object of meditation. And then you strive to maintain wholesome mental states that have arisen, not let them fade away, to bring them to greater growth, to the full perfection of development. How do you do that? By watching when the slightest tension arises and letting it go and staying on your object of meditation. That's the complete wholesome state. That's the pure mind. Now, I know there's some difference between the Mahayana way of describing this and the Theravada way of describing this, but according to the Theravadins, this is called voidness. Doesn't mean there's not an object of meditation. It means that there's no tension or tightness. There's no false idea of a self. And when there's no false idea of a self, that means it's void of that. And that's why it's called voidness, according to the Theravada Buddhists. I don't understand the Mahayana idea of voidness. Nobody's been able to explain it to me well enough that I really understand. So we won't go into differences on that. Now there's four roads to power. The kind of power that he's talking about here is psychic power. Developing your psychic ability. Here a monk develops concentration. We'll stop right there and replace the word concentration with composure, stillness, but not one-pointed. Concentration of attention, of intention, accompanied by effort of will. Now, what this is talking about, the effort of will, is when your mind is on your object of meditation and you start to see tightness arise, you have a choice right then. Either you can let go of that tightness, or if you don't, then you can watch how everything else builds up and pulls your mind away. But this is where free will is. If your mindfulness is sharp enough, you will naturally see that tightness and you'll let it go. If your mindfulness is not sharp enough, it dulls out a little bit, then your mind gets pulled away from your object of meditation. Now, the whole idea of free will, when they start talking in Abhidhamma, they get completely lost, as far as I can see, because they're trying to say that there is something of free will, but there isn't at the same time. But according to the suttas, we have to drop the Abhidhamma, because that's just intellectual gymnastics. According to the sutta, the free will happens at the moment of your awareness seeing any change, and what you do with that. Opening up and letting go and allowing, staying on your object of meditation is part of free will. Or dulling out and not seeing it, it's your choice to be completely mindful or not. And that's what the free will is talking about. Yeah. The free will actually doesn't talk about it directly, but it talks about the five hindrances. Now, it also talks about the five aggregates. Half of the time in the suttas, when it's talking about the aggregates, they say the aggregates affected by clinging. That means by thoughts. But I don't like that translation very well. And they always use that. Aggregates affected by clinging. If I was to write the suttas over again, I would say the aggregates that may or may not be affected by clinging. And when you say may or may not, that's where your free will is. Now, it takes a lot of energy. It takes one of the reasons that it seems that when you start practicing meditation, that it seems like it takes a long time before you build up momentum, is because it does take a lot of energy to be able to see how the process works. And when you first start meditating, your mind is moving at such big swings. You can't see the process very well. It takes a lot of energy to let go and finally relax and come back to your object of meditation. Over a period of time, as you build up your energy, you're able to see a little bit more clearly. Your mind becomes a little bit more alert. And this is part of discipline. A lot of people will come and want to learn how to do the meditation, because they have this idea, if I meditate, I'm going to be calm and I won't have any problems. And then they come and they see the vast movements of their mind and they say, oh no, this is too hard, I can't do that. They don't want to put any energy into really seeing what the teacher is trying to show them. It takes a lot of energy. And the more and more subtle the mind gets, the more energy it takes. But you're so used to putting out that energy that it doesn't seem like it takes much at all. It's just like building up your muscles. At first, when you start building up your muscles get sore. They don't like that. But as you do it more and more, you get stronger, it becomes much easier just to do it. And you're building up your mindfulness muscle when you do the meditation. Now, he keeps on using concentration of consciousness, concentration of energy, concentration of investigation, concentration of effort of will. And I don't like that word concentration, even though here you can kind of use it. It means a gathering up of, being able to focus. When you have a lot of people and you spread them over a big area, that's not a very concentrated area, but when you pull them all together and they're touching each other, then you could say that's a concentration of people. And this is the sense that he's using with the word concentration here. Now, the concentration of consciousness means the awareness of how the process works, the awareness, the mindfulness. People get mind and consciousness mixed up. Mind is the thinking part, and consciousness is the awareness of. It's the awareness. Now, the concentration of investigation, accompanied by effort of will. In other words, you want to direct your mind so that you can see how everything works, so you can see the process. You investigate it. One of my teachers, when he started talking about the seven factors of enlightenment, the second factor he called, other teachers always just say, it just means investigation. But he made it a little bit more clear when he said, investigation of your experience. And what does that mean? It means seeing the process. Investigating how it arises. Now, we're going to go into a more interesting thing, I think. And we're going to start talking about jhanas, the four jhanas. Here a monk detached from all sense desires, detached from unwholesome states, enters and remains in the first jhana. Now, the becoming detached from sense desires. A lot of people that start meditating and they hear that you have to be detached from sense desires, they say, I don't want to be detached from sense desires. I like sense desires. I like touch, and I like sight, and I like sound. But while you're meditating, especially while you're sitting, you close your eyes. Where's the sense pleasure of seeing? It doesn't arise. Why? Because your eyes are closed. If you hear a sound, if you taste something, if you smell something, if something touches your body, if a thought arises, there's just seeing that your mind got pulled to it and letting it be and relaxing and coming back to your object of meditation. In other words, you're not caught in the thinking about that sense pleasure as it arose and become involved in it. And that's how you become detached. Now, with your daily activities, you're going to get caught by the sense pleasures. A nice taste arises from food you eat, and immediately there's tightness that happens and all kinds of other things. This process works in the same way. But then you're going to be caught by thinking, oh, that was lovely. I really like that. I want some more of that. That was like what I had last time, and I really liked it then. And then your mind takes off and thinks about something else, and thinks about something else, and you're away from your true experience of tasting because your mind becomes so distracted. That's the nature of mind. Once a thought arises, then another one follows, and another one follows, and before you know it, you're 1,000 miles away. So, when you become detached from the sense pleasure, you eat something, and your mind says, oh, that's really good. And then you let it go and relax and enjoy it completely without being pulled away by thinking about it. And by relaxing any tension or tightness. And then you have the full experience. Because most times, people say a mango that's incredibly good. Most times, somebody will eat a mango and they'll really like it. And it was really sweet, really good. And then you start thinking about, wow, I got to get some more of that. That's really good. I can do all kinds of these mangoes. And then you're thinking about something else and thinking about something else. And it's the cause of getting pulled away. And you're not really experiencing the mango anymore because you're thinking. Even though you take another bite of the mango, you're still not with it completely. A glutton, but they're people that are gluttonous are more interested in the feeling and liking the feeling and thinking about the feeling and getting just thinking about other things. That they keep doing it, they keep putting things in their mouth, but they don't really realize that that's what they're doing. They just know that this feeling is good and they want more of it. Okay? So when you have any one of the sense doors arise, a beautiful sight, an ugly sight, a beautiful taste, an ugly taste, a beautiful smell, an ugly smell, a beautiful sound, an ugly sound, a beautiful thought, an ugly thought. As soon as you notice it, you relax into it. Now your mind is in the present moment. It's not dwelling on all of the effects and all of the thoughts attached to that. That's how you become detached from the sense pleasures. And that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it in the present moment. You can. But there's nothing pulling you away from the present moment anymore. You're just staying in the present moment. You're seeing how it works. How does taste work? Have you ever noticed? What happens first? What happens right after that? Just taste. How does taste arise? Where does the taste of mango arise on your tongue? I know. I can show you exactly. Right there. How do I know that? Because I watched it. What's the first taste that arises when the taste of mango comes up? No. What's the taste? sour first. Sour. And then sweet. Then a little bit of salty taste. Now, each one of these different tastes are on different parts of your tongue. How do I know that? Because I watched it. That's how you investigate. Now, when you see that, you're not attached to it. You are detached. Because you're seeing how this process works. And it goes back to the back of the tongue. There's taste buds all over your tongue. But it's an interesting process when you investigate. When you take an interest in how the experience works. And it doesn't matter what sense door it is. How does seeing work? How does hearing work? I'll give you a clue. It always starts with a feeling. Then that feeling arises and the tightness starts. And then the thoughts about the feeling. Now, I just described to you dependent origination. That's how the process works. As your mind becomes more and more calm, you start seeing in much different, more precise ways. And everything becomes incredibly interesting. Okay, how do you become detached from unwholesome states? Letting it go and relaxing. Coming back to your object of meditation. Anything that has any tension arising in your body, at any part of your body, is the start of an unwholesome state. Now, you hear me talk a lot about the tension in your head, in your mind, because that's where the first one starts. Sometimes it can come into the shoulder, sometimes it can come into the back or the knee or whatever. But there is more tensions that arise. And those tensions are caused by the false idea of this being a personal thing. This is mine. It doesn't work like that. When you let go of the tension, then you see very clearly. There's no tightness anywhere in your body. There's only this pure mind. And as you bring this pure mind back to your meditation, your mind over a period of time will start to stay on this wholesome object of meditation. Being extremely mindful, alert, and observant. Meditation is by far the best show in town. It's more interesting than any entertainment that you could ever come up with. When your mind begins to settle down and you start to get into the jhanas and you start to see the process more and more and more clearly, as your mind goes deeper into your meditation, you go to the second jhana. When it goes deeper, you go to the third jhana. When it goes deeper, you go to the fourth jhana, where there's perfect equanimity in your mind. You see everything in a different way. And it becomes more and more interesting. more and more fun to watch it. Now, the difference between the one-pointed concentration and the tranquility concentration is when your mindfulness, even if you're in the fourth jhana, starts to slip a little bit and you're not as aware as you could be, then you're not in the jhana anymore and a hindrance comes up. This is how it works. Then you have to work with that till you can let it go. But you start seeing everything as process. And it's completely fascinating. Every different sense door has aspects to it that are incredibly interesting if you take the time to look at them. But most of the time, we're moving around too fast, we're getting caught by our thoughts too much, and we're not very aware. Now, what's the advantage of doing a meditation retreat? You do a meditation retreat because that's the time to slow down and spend your time continually watching the process and letting it go, relaxing. And then you start seeing things in more and more deeper ways. Now, as I was talking about the hindrances before, when you let go of a hindrance, you're letting go of an attachment. And attachment takes up space in your mind. And this attachment clouds the way you see the world and the way you react to the world. So when you let go of a hindrance, you've let go of this attachment. There's a little space there. But nature doesn't like a vacuum. If you don't believe me, clean off your desk and watch how long it takes for things to start piling up on it. You can clean that baby off clean, nothing on it. And you come back the next day and it's got piles of stuff on it. Nature doesn't like empty spots. So what it does is it takes this pain from the attachment and it replaces it with the opposite, joy. And there's five different kinds of joy. Three kinds of joy happen for anybody at any time. Doesn't matter whether you meditate or not. These kinds of joy can arise. The first kind of joy is it's a little happy feeling, but you get goosebumps. They call it goose flesh. And it's there for a moment and disappears. But it's a pleasurable thing. The next kind of joy, it's like a flash of lightning. It's very intense,